Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Thursday, March 19, 2015, and it is 1:31 in the afternoon, and I'd like to welcome my Vice Chair, Senator Giesel, Senator Ellis, Senator Meyer, Senator Stevens, and I am Senator Costello. I'd like to thank Carrie and Jonathan, our Recording Secretary and our LIO operator for your assistance. Okay. Without your help, we couldn't have this hearing. Today we have three bills on the agenda, and with time if time is available, we will add a fourth, a bill that we've previously heard. We'll begin with board appointments for two boards, and then we will follow that with Senate Bill 58, Transport Network Services and Workers' Compensation. And finally, we will hear from the sponsor of Senate Bill 2, Employment Preferences for Veterans and Spouses. So with that, members, we'll go ahead and start with our two board appointments. This is the committee's fourth hearing on boards and commissions appointees. The intent is to hear from the appointees, take public testimony, and set the nominations aside because we will be forwarding them all on in one group, putting those forward. And then for the board appointments, two of the governor's board appointments have been withdrawn and will not be heard today. So that information has been forwarded to your offices. You have the board rosters, the fact sheets, and appointees' resumes in your committee packets. And I want to offer the appointees an opportunity to make remarks, and then we'll have any committee questions, public testimony, and then we'll go ahead and close that public testimony for each one. So our first board is the Board of Public Accountancy. The applicant is Jeffrey Johnson of Fairbanks. This is the CPA seat, and I'd like to welcome Mr. Johnson to make some brief remarks for the committee.
Thank you, committee. I apologize for missing the first session, but I appreciate the opportunity today. I'm applying for my second term and final term on the State Board of Accountancy. I've been a practicing CPA out of college and in the accounting profession for 40 years now. Our board is tasked with licensing CPAs who issue reports on private, government, and nonprofit financial statements, adhering to their quality and consistency. Fairbanks is my home, and I enjoy working for the profession and trying to make sure the profession and the reporting is quality in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, is there anyone here to testify on this nominee? Okay, seeing none. Is there anyone online? Okay. Go ahead and close public testimony. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I appreciate you making yourself available for the committee and appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Alaska on a board. Next, we have the Board of Marital and Family Therapists. And we will be hearing from Leon Weber, the licensed therapist seat. It's one of five seats on the board. And Leon, are you online?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee and let us know your interest in serving on this board.
Thank you, and thank the committee. My name is Leon Weber. I've been a practicing marriage and family therapist since 1973 in Alaska. It's my privilege to chair the board at the current time and also to be nominated for a second term. The privilege of chairing the board includes the challenge of addressing some very complicated issues these days, and one of them is teletherapy and telesupervision, which many of our fields, including psychology, social work, licensed professional counselors, marriage and family therapy, are dealing with. I welcome this opportunity, and it's a privilege and a responsibility to both protect consumer protection and also to encourage and nurture and see that we have licensees that carry out their responsibilities. Thanks so much. Appreciate this.
Thank you very much. Are there any committee questions for Mr. Weber? Okay, seeing none, is anyone from the public interested in testifying, either here in Juneau or online? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Weber. Again, I appreciate you making yourself available and coming before the committee for your confirmation hearing. And as I mentioned earlier, the committee will be passing on the names en masse forward. So again, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Next, we have Senate Bill 58. This is a Transport Network Services and Workers' Compensation Bill. This is the first hearing for the bill. My intent is to hear it, have a presentation from the bill sponsor, then we have the department here and members from industry, and then I will take public testimony. So with that, I'd like to welcome Senator Stoltz forward. Welcome, Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Chair Costello. Bill Stoltz, Senate District F, and today I'm speaking for the Southern Senate District F and as well as Senate District G. This is an issue, of transportation is of great import to the communities of Chugach Eagle River. So it's a community of in excess of 35,000 people. I know there's people at this panel who have represented part of that community as well as myself, which has very serious transportation deficiencies. It's because of existing laws, regulations, other factors. And the Chugach Eagle River delegation got together and we're trying to do any measure to try to increase transportation access for that community of 35,000, which is important to both folks at the lower income level all the way up to affluent people who wish to avail themselves, just can't even get transportation services. Some folks have labeled this a bill related to a certain company. I could care less which company it is. I would like to remove what are stated barriers to having a level of transportation access to any community in the state. The community of Bethel probably has a couple hundred cabs, and they don't have the barriers Anchorage has. The community of Chugach Eagle River, again, a community in excess of the population of the city of Burl Juneau, doesn't have reliable taxi cab and other comparable accesses, and it's not because there's not a demand. There's an incredible demand. It's the debate within the municipality of Anchorage, which that community is in the unfortunate position of being part of, and that's my political narrative as well. It's it's part of the municipality of Anchorage. There are rules, regulations, and frankly, a lot of complex political deals and accommodations. One of them stated has been, as I've read in the press, is we can settle this transportation issue and put together an ordinance, but we got to settle the insurance issue, which I take as an invitation that since the municipality of Anchorage doesn't set state insurance policy, this is one step which will facilitate the debate of providing some type of transportation service for that very large community, one of the largest communities in the state, which is without transportation access. In fact, even at the lower end, bus service has been severely limited there at the lower end. A lot of upper and middle end commuters would like to use taxi services if they were available, but it's complication well beyond my comprehension to understand all the. But I don't have any desire to get in the middle of a municipality of Anchorage debate on what the merits of regulation. We wanted to limit this to one piece of removing what's been stated by the mayor and people running for mayor that have advocacy issues one way or the other. We got to fix the insurance problem. That's a big concern. So, well, here we are before the Labor and Commerce Committee with a insurance fix, which wasn't my suggestion, but I am being a facilitator in our delegation. I agreed to introduce this as a State Affairs Committee to show that it wasn't my singular bill, and it's by request, and by request indicates support of our delegation and support of a community that has had far more transportation committee meetings than I can even count here on these hands here. with no resolution. So this is just one step in trying to remove an obstacle. And if I might have just a couple more seconds to just talk about potential vehicle moving, one for hire or otherwise, there's been a lingering issue, and I've talked to the chairperson about this. There's a serious flaw in our state law where horse carriage drivers are treated, everybody I've talked to within the administration, otherwise they agree to the same mechanics of a taxi cab. You have a contract employee for hire. Department of Labor has come down like a ton of bricks on the one or two carriage drivers we have, and it's really personal unfinished business too. I think it's an equity issue by every definition of carriage, and that's one of the issues I wanted to suggest we add to this. That thought occurred to me afterwards. I just want to throw that on the record. It's an issue I'm thinking of, and for the record, one of them happens to live in my district, and many of you may be familiar, he operates in downtown Anchorage. Department of Labor has suggested this is going to open a floodgate and will cause all kinds of upheaval in existing labor law. I don't know, there's a lot of big horse draft carriage companies around, and it's not the most lucrative business, but throw that out is it just for your consideration. It's something that I would, as we develop this, if this is a vehicle that that the committee sees merit in, I've asked for consideration of that issue, which I came up after the fact, or if there's resistance, I can do it as a separate bill. But that concludes my extemporaneous testimony.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. And I did want to mention for the members, there's a letter signed by Senator McKinnon, Senator Stoltz, Representative Sadler, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Tilton that's in your packet. So appreciate you carrying this on behalf of your delegation there. Are there any questions? Senator Stevens.
I just want to make sure you're not suggesting the horses be covered under workers' comp, are you?
I don't, Madam Chair, I don't have enough horsepower to try to push those issues.
Thank you.
Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Stoltz, you talked about Chugiak and the lack of transportation services. Can you comment on other portions of the municipality? Eagle River and Gerd would come to mind.
Sure.
Transportation services there?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the community we commonly refer to as Chugiak, Eagle River, and always put Chugiak first. And it's an issue in Girdwood. It's an area that's separated by distance. There's a willingness for people to pay for transportation services. There's an unwillingness for the industry to actually be responsive. We probably can't deal with that in the legislative process. It's certainly not my intent, but if we can remove some of the obstacles that the municipalities and advocates, I guess we'll find out should we pass this and they still have an intransigence and this wasn't the real issue. But I can only go by on good faith where I believe the problems are and where they've been stated.
Any further questions? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Stoltz, thank you for bringing this bill forward. And I agree 100% with you that, we need more service out in that area. And that actually, citywide, even the municipality or the Anchorage Bowl area, especially, I'm told, I wouldn't know this, but at bar closing, you can't get a way home. And unfortunately, I think some people are probably driving when they shouldn't because they get tired of waiting for some mode of transportation. And I know you're not doing this for any one particular company because there's several companies that provide this type of service. Now, is this insurance bill or workers' comp bill? I'm kind of confused here.
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, it has to do with, insurance. I guess it's an insurance bill that workman's comp is a variety of insurance. And, this has been suggested as a major obstacle. I'd call it an insurance bill. As it relates to an industry or a potential industry, and certainly I don't portend that I've come up with, our delegation is forwarding the perfect solution that's it's inviolate in its form presented. There are certainly other disparate views from both industry, perhaps even intransigence from maybe the Department of Labor they're worried about setting precedents or violating theology. No, I shouldn't say that. That's they have cautions. I'll leave it at that, and I'll withdraw that other statement.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I may, how does what you're trying to do with this bill compare to how other states have dealt with this?
Mr. Chairman, I am actually a neophyte on understanding a lot of them. I don't really use taxi cabs, and I don't. Luckily, I have enough good friends. there are folks I'm only relying on what our municipality has said as a barrier, and I apologize. Perhaps I should have done more extensive research on this. I'm only trying to advocate what our municipality has said as a barrier, and I'm not really representing one carrier or an industry. I'm just trying to remove a barrier for that our municipality and perhaps our Department of Labor can assist us with if these are removed, and we'll find out how controversial or how they are as they're discussed. It's as any idea presented. Our intents are, I guess nothing is pure, but they're very good motivated. They're well motivated in our intent and trying to provide transportation access for unserved and incredibly underserved areas.
No, and Madam Chair, I appreciate you bringing this forward so we can begin the discussion, and I personally can learn more about this whole industry because I'm naive, but I know it's a serious issue for our municipality of Anchorage, including Chugiak, Eagle River, so I look forward to the discussion on this bill.
And Mr. Chairman, this has been painful having to acknowledge that Chugiak, Eagle River is part of the of Anchorage. You don't know how much this hurts.
You've gone through enough of it, haven't you?
And I'm sure we'll have time to find out what other states are doing because they're all wrestling with the same issue. So we'll make sure that the members have that information, and perhaps somebody later today could even talk about other states' efforts. Any further questions, Senator Meyer?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz. Next, I'd like to have Mike Mongel, the Director of Workers' Compensation Division, who is here. And Mike, thank you.
For the record, my name is Mike Monagle. I'm the director for the Division of Workers' Compensation, and here today to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 58. Conceptually, the department doesn't have a problem if the transportation network is simply defined as akin to a taxi cab operation. But as worded, it appears that there could be broader applications of this type of bill. The bill says that someone who owns, leases, or is authorized to use a motor vehicle can provide these transportation services, and the network provider is simply, if you will, a IT provider who arranges passengers to be transported from one location to another. It strikes us that with that language, tour operators could also follow this same model and say that an authorized driver whose passengers arrange for transportation and sightseeing could be exempted from workers' comp insurance under this act. If it was strictly limited to a taxi or limousine type service, the department would not have as much concern because we recognize there already is an exemption under the Workers' Comp Act for taxi cab drivers. There are some questions on specific language in the bill. There's a section 11, subsection C on the draft legislation. seems to state
Mr.
that...
Mr. Monagle, do
yes.
you mind pointing out for us what page you're on?
Madam Chair, it's page 2 at line 25.
Thank you.
It says that a person is exempted when providing transportation services once they take on a passenger, concluding once the passenger exits. So the question that we have is what happens to that network driver in between time. So if I'm waiting for my next passenger and I get into a motor vehicle accident, am I exempted? Am I still covered? Am I an employee? So that seems like a problematic area. The other issue that we have specifically are sections 3 and 4 at page 3. Those sections would apply the legislation retroactively, which means if there were a driver who currently had a workers' comp claim or a proceeding that the division has before the workers' comp board, those claims or proceedings would be set aside by the retroactive clause. We would, if the bill is moved forward and passed, we prefer that retroactive provision to be taken out of the bill. And Madam Chair, that's the extent of my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Monagle. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Monagle, I hate to take you back to the basics here, but can you tell me why taxi cab companies are exempted from workers' comp? How did that happen? What was that all about?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, that exemption has been in statute for quite a number of years. I'm not sure of the history behind that exemption. There are specific limitations to that exemption. There has to be a contract, a written contract between the taxi owner and its drivers. And then under the labor law, there are specific restrictions on how the person can accept payment. It has to be a fee per passenger basis. I think I have a copy here. It's under... AS 2310, Section 13, I believe, but there are some specific limitations on taxi drivers.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I think I'm missing something very basic. Why did we ever do this? What's the rationale for exempting taxi? I mean, am I missing the really, I don't think you explained that point. Why did we ever do this? What was the logical reason to exempt taxi cabs?
Senator Stevens, I guess through the chair, the broader question here in my mind is whether somebody is an employee or an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. I'm really, that's the nuts and bolts of the question.
I see.
And I guess the conclusion of the legislature was that in many instances, a driver for a taxi cab company is an independent contractor. Similar theme, Senate Bill 58 would provide a similar exemption under that same analysis, that a driver for a network services company is an independent contractor, not an employee.
Any further questions, Senator Stevens?
No, I'm totally confused now, so thank you.
Well, it's not the intent of the committee to have confused members, so we will we'll be looking at this legislation. And Mr. Monagle, despite or except for taxi cab drivers, who else is exempt from the workers' compensation?
Madam Chair, there's a list of exemptions. Let me pull it up here. It's a fairly narrow list. Babysitters. That's under AS 2330-230. The following persons are exempt under the law: babysitter, a cleaning person, seasonal harvest help, a person employed as a sports official on a contract basis, a person who's a contract entertainer, commercial fisherman, a person who drives a taxi cab, a person who is a professional hockey player or professional hockey coach.
I'm glad to hear that. My insurance rates will stay lower because of it.
And there are just a few others, qualified real estate licensees. Generally, when The division encounters a situation where you have an injured worker and they bring a claim forward and the employer asserts that they are not an employee but an independent contractor. There's a test under regulation. It's called the relative nature of the work test. It's similar to an IRS type of rule where we go through analysis and look at the facts of each case to determine whether or not there's an employee-employer relationship.
And as far as your comments related to issues that the department has, the administration has with the legislation, do you feel that these are issues that can be addressed through an amendment, or would you be willing to work with us to find out if there's something that we can do to remove that the objections?
Madam Chair, I believe so. I believe that there is an exemption for taxi drivers already, so if it's narrowly construed, I think the department would not object if we remove sections 3 and 4 and make those other changes. It's sort of a broader picture, and I think it was referenced that, you know, this is new technology. This is a new approach to doing business, and I think a number of states are struggling with the concept. This bill narrowly defines that to being a operator of a motor vehicle. The department is concerned, obviously, if that model is taken on and expanded, anything that's not brick and mortar that's dispatched by a network service or a smartphone could theoretically fall under the idea of or concept of being an independent contractor. And we're seeing this countrywide, there's this movement away from employee-employer relationships to a independent contractor. And there was a Fortune 500 parcel delivery company that said its drivers were not employees but were independent contractors leasing their trucks, and ended up in litigation, and the federal district court ruled that they were in fact an employer and its drivers were employees. So this is an issue that has been popping up, and states are looking at whether or not these types of exemptions are in the best interest of working men and women. I guess the other concern is what happens when a driver or their passengers do get involved in a motor vehicle accident. Is there sufficient medical coverage? Is there sufficient liability insurance? Is there a vehicle to replace their wages? And some of these ride-sharing operations, their statistics indicate that a lot of these drivers are part-time, meaning they have other full-time work. So if they're injured and unable to return to work, and there isn't a wage replacement or a vehicle to take care of their medical costs, what happens to those folks?
Any further committee questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Monagle. If we may have you back if there are further questions, but thank you very much. The Division of Insurance staff are also available if we have any questions for the Division of Insurance. And let's see. Marty Hester, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm here.
Marty, do you, our previous presenter mentioned the question of lack of insurance coverage from the, or in between the different pickups. I mean, did you want to comment on that? I know this bill really focuses on the workers' compensation piece, but did you have any comments on that?
Madam Chair, what I would say is that the Division of Insurance is following the bill. Section 58 does not affect Title 21, the Alaska Insurance Statutes. But we're concerned, and we've issued out public notices over the past year, just letting the community know about transportation network companies and insurance issues that could go along with them. So we're monitoring the bill to see if any amendments are put in to address anything that touches Title 21, and really monitoring it, the whole situation, to ensure that the lack of insurance at any particular time is alleviated. So That's our main concern, that we want to ensure that there's insurance provided during all phases of someone operating these vehicles.
So that falls right now outside of the scope of this legislation, but I just wanted to let you know that Marty's available. Next, I'd like to invite Bryce Bennett up, the operations manager for Uber. Welcome, Bryce.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. As you said, I am the senior operations manager for Uber here in the Northwest. Work specifically here on our operations in Alaska. Contrary to what most people think, not everyone from Uber is from San Francisco. Spent a lot of time in Alaska, actually. So what is Uber? I think is probably a relevant piece just to discuss at its most basic level what a transportation network company is. And what we are is a technology platform. We're connecting riders and drivers in right now over 290 cities around the globe. The system is cashless. It brings an unprecedented level of accountability. You leave feedback as soon as you get out of a car. You see the driver, his name, of course, but also a picture of him, a picture of his vehicle, his license plate number, everything before he even comes to pick you up. This system has created an unprecedented level of accountability that has not existed for a long time in the transportation industry. Today, obviously, this is a much narrower scope of, rather than a comprehensive transportation network company bill, this is solely focusing on the workers' compensation, and really, we do agree, it is about whether the people that partner on our system and the small businesses that use this platform are small businesses or, in fact, employees. To give a little bit of background on how a driver or a potential driver would leverage our platform and how they would become a part of it, they would go through an application process that really has a couple different components, really three. First, they would begin by providing for us their documents. Again, these are personal vehicles, right? People driving their own cars. What we do is we have them submit driver's license, registration on the vehicle, as well as their personal insurance or proof of insurance. And then they also go and get a vehicle inspection done at a local certified mechanic. So they go through a 19-point process for that. Cars have to be 10 years or newer, as well as cannot be a rebuilt or salvaged title. Beyond that, they go through a stringent background check. It goes back 7 years. It covers everything from their motor vehicle record check, local, county, and multi-state court records. We do a national criminal and sex offender database registry check. So assuming someone is able to move through all these processes, they would then have access to the platform and be able to offer transportation, connect with the riders that have downloaded our application. It's a smartphone application. So speaking to how it works when you are an active driver or partner leveraging the platform, someone that's using this to earn money, you have complete freedom and flexibility to log on and off as you see fit. We don't have shifts. We don't tell you where to drive, when to drive. You could do one trip a week or you could do 25 trips a week. On average, we actually see that the partners that are leveraging the platform, they actually are only averaging 5 hours a week or 20 hours per month. Another characteristic that defines these small businesses is the fact that they are not dispatched. They receive a request. And on their application, I wish I had a phone to show you this right now, but they receive a request when they're available on the application, when they say, I'm available to come pick someone up. The thing is, you're not dispatched in the sense that you're not on a lease at the time, you're not paying a taxi cab owner for that opportunity to rent that vehicle. You're in your own vehicle. You could be in your own home. And you have the opportunity to say, yes, I'll take that request, or no, I'm going to let this one pass. I actually have something to do. Something came up. I got to take the kids to school or go to the grocery store, whatever it might be. It is very, very conducive, and we actually see that that is the most valuable component for these small businesses, is the flexibility that this platform provides. They don't have to be set to a rigorous schedule every week. Further beyond that, they are their own small business. So like I said, in many cities, they go and obtain a city business license, just as you would if you're opening up any kind of business in a city. No equipment is provided to the drivers on the platform. They use their own application on their smartphones. Partners take 80%, and I think this was referenced that it has to be a calculated fare earlier for the taxi cabs as a condition for them to be exempt from this piece. That is exactly how our system works. It's a calculated fare based on minutes, mileage, and a base fare. Partners who leverage the platform actually give the ride take 80% of the calculated rate. Further, the partners utilizing the system receive a 1099 at the end of each year, just as you would if you were a contractor of any other business. Finally, I know this isn't here in Alaska yet, but in other cities where there are multiple TNC operators like a Lyft, a sidecar, including us, Uber, you actually have the opportunity, there's no exclusivity. You could be a partner or driver that utilizes all three of those platforms. And you have the opportunity, like I said, if you had all three phones sitting on your coffee table waiting for a request, you could accept one but not the other. You can work across platforms, which by its very nature is, you know, a small business working on its own, taking requests as they see fit. Finally, I would like to just readdress the fact that, you know, we are working with the City of Anchorage, of course, on a more comprehensive piece addressing transportation network companies in Anchorage. But this piece of legislation does specifically have a scope very narrow just on this workers' compensation issue. And it's something that is being worked upon not only here in Alaska, but in other states such as Arkansas, Florida, and a few other around the country. So. I appreciate the opportunity to provide a little bit more insight. I know that was very quick on how our operations work, but if I can answer any other questions, please let me know.
Any questions from committee members? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm totally naive to Uber or any of the other forms of transportation that you mentioned, but my daughter has used it a lot and has been a big advocate that we need Uber in Anchorage, so whatever that's worth. Anyway, how does one tell? I mean, again, I'm used to the old taxi cabs, and you can see what the fare is on the dashboard. How does one know what the fare is, and if you're going the right routes, and where's the controls, I guess?
Madam Chair and Senator Meyer, so at the beginning of the rate structure, when you have your application open as a rider, you're able to just press on the rate kind of area and it pops up. It shows you the per mile, per minute, as well as the base fare that is charged. Like I said, it's a cashless system, so it all goes through your credit card. So you have complete visibility up front. Further, if you plug in your final destination, it also will show you an estimate. Of course, we can't. It's a little bit hard to tell if there's traffic or weather, whatever it might be, but it gives you a pretty definite estimate of what your rate will be to go from that spot to that spot, from A to B. Beyond that, how do you know you're taking the right route? We have the opportunity, actually, for drivers. As soon as you plug in your final destination, you can just hit Navigate in the button, Navigate in the app, and it will give you step-by-step directions vocally. They don't have to be fidgeting with the phone the whole time, but vocally to them for the duration of the trip. Finally, as accountability after the fact, we solicit feedback after every single trip that's done on the system. So you would rate your driver that you had 1 to 5 stars. We see anything as a 3-star or below as something we need to follow up on. It flags our incident response team, which is on duty pretty much 24 hours a day, 365. We average a 25 to 30 minute response time on those. So we can follow up and not only provide feedback to the driver, but address any issues or concerns with the rider. You also, as a rider, finally, I know it's a lot of information, I will get a receipt to your email that shows your exact route, who your driver was, the time, the distance, everything about your trip, basically, from A to B. And if you do have an issue with it, more than happy to follow up with it on our operations team and see if there might have been a faster route or whatever it might have been.
Okay, and if I can just follow up. So as the parent of my daughter, I can kind of track where she's going in this Uber car on my iPhone, right?
Chair Costello and Senator Meyer, yes, you can. We have an opportunity where you can, if you're the person in the car, share your, what we call share your ETA, or, you know, it's time to arrival, where it will give you, as potentially father of your daughter, to map where they are, their progress on the trip, the route they have taken, and the estimated time to when they will actually get to the final destination.
Great. And if I may, Madam Chair, more serious question. Some cabs have cab drivers, again, independent contractors, so it's up to them, I guess, have opted to put up the plexiglass to protect them from the passengers. Is this something that you encourage your independent contractors to do, too, for their own safety, or is that just up to them?
Madam Chair and Senator Meyer, what we see is really this is a game-changer event, not only for riders on ground transportation, but for drivers as well. I've talked to many former taxi drivers who have now switched to our system and drive with the Uber platform, and they say, both women and men alike, in a predominantly male industry, that they feel very safe. The system has done is it is taking cash out of the equation. Everything is through your credit card. There's accountability from start to finish because you have to sign up with, of course, your smartphone, but also credit card. We know exactly where you requested as well as where you get dropped off. For the drivers, like I explained, they go through a very stringent end-to-end process, not only themselves but their vehicles. As far as the actual plexiglass shield, I haven't seen that before, but we have seen an unprecedented change in safety for drivers on the platform. Because of the accountability the system brings.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Well, it does concern me that if Senate President can track his daughter, they might try to track us as well.
That's right.
But going back to the issue, it seems to me the issue is employer versus contractor, and it's fascinating to hear about the whole story, but really that's what it comes down to. So the taxi cab companies are, in fact, considered contractors. And your position is that you would like to see your fellows considered, and gals, whoever, considered contractors as well. So Mr. Monago has listed to us his concern and his opposition to the bill under two positions in the bill, on page 2 and on page 3. Can you address those, and is that correctable to the point that all sides would find it acceptable?
Madam Chair and Senator Stevens, in regards to, I think it was question 12, line 21 here, right? Or I should say that whole entire section regarding transportation network providers?
Page 2, line 25.
Line 25. So in that case, I think the concern, I believe, if I remember, was the scope was large and that it may end up opening the doors for other type of operators. I think this is pretty clear. This is very standard definition of what a transportation network company does, and what the small businesses and partners of the system do. They carry a passenger, they go to pick them up, and they carry a passenger from A to B. It states that pretty clearly in here. In regards to the issue surrounding a package provider, I believe, was brought up. A very different situation. We don't own or lease any vehicles. They're all private vehicles. These people own their own cars. Like I said, we don't have a shift schedule like one of those companies might be doing. We don't have a set hourly rate. It's all based on the fares that you're able to do on the platform. So very different situation from what was referenced there. I think if we go down to section 3 and 4, I believe mostly this is about the retroactivity piece. I think this is important. As maybe some of you know, we have been operating doing free rides in the city of Anchorage from September 18th up until just a couple weeks ago. We paused operations doing that in Anchorage, unrelated to our discussions there and trying to move something forward with an ordinance at the local level, the municipality, but that is the importance of that clause that we have already been providing to the tune of tens of thousands of rides, and almost 100 small businesses have partnered using the platform in Anchorage. So that is why we believe that piece should remain in, as part of the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Bennett, in other states, how have they addressed the employee versus independent contractor issue?
Chair Costello, we actually see that this issue is being brought up in a couple different states across the country. I believe the ones that are farthest along are Arkansas and Florida. Also, it's being addressed in a few different states throughout the country in different forms, but this is something that I think it's still a new and quickly changing industry, and so I think it's still something that a lot of states are working through during these legislative sessions.
And when you say they're moving along, could you be more specific? Are they moving towards independent contractor? Or? what does that mean when you say moving along?
Chair Costello, in Arkansas and Florida specifically, we do see it shifting in that direction. It is, like I said, there's complete flexibility in this system. There are really no aspects of it that a typical, what would be classified as employee would do. Able to work whenever you'd like, and that piece of it in Arkansas and Florida is moving in that direction. I can pull some more information and send it along for those states after the hearing here.
And have there been any litigation regarding this particular issue?
Chair Costello, we are working with the state of Alaska right now on the current piece with the State Department of Labor in regards to this. Litigation I'm not familiar with outside of this, outside of that piece here in Alaska.
Any further questions? Senator Ellis.
Thank you. excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're talking about workers' comp and a form of insurance. What other kinds of insurance are involved here? When do they kick in? How do they compare to the existing taxi industry? What's required of them? What's required of this new business model? Can you just take us through the insurance issue more broadly than just workers' comp? Because there may be some interplay.
Chair Costello and Senator Ellis, thank you for asking. I do have a handout here. I don't know if you'd be amenable to me passing around that has our insurance. Kind of like visual of how our insurance works might be helpful. Let me just grab out a few copies here.
I'm going to take a brief at ease. Calling the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee back to order, and my aide, Weston Eiler, will be making copies of your handout for the other members.
Chair Costello.
Actually, he'll be making the copies for the public because it looks like we all have a copy.
Yes,
so thank you.
Chair Costello, I appreciate that. I apologize for not bringing enough for everyone in the room. But in regards to the insurance piece, again, something outside of the scope of this bill in front of you today, but how our insurance works is we're really bridging, and we're the first company to do this, really we're bridging the gap between what is typically a commercial and a personal insurance industry, and you're using personal vehicles in commercial activity here. And so what we have is $1 million of primary commercial insurance from the time that the driver accepts it through the application to the time that the rider gets out of the vehicle. And that also extends to underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage, as well as comprehensive coverage. The other time period when you have the application on, but before you have accepted a ride, and again, you could be sitting in your home at your coffee table, looking at your phone, or really anywhere. At that time, we have contingent insurance that would cover in the case of any issues with your personal insurance policy. And as a reminder, that is the case here in the middle section, the little bit lighter blue section there. I'm sorry, you have a grayscale chart. But the middle section there is period what we call one. And that is the period where no transaction is occurring. You're not on your way to any one specific place to pick anyone up. You haven't been connected to a rider yet. And at that time, your personal insurance is primary, which we, of course, like I said, is a requirement of becoming a partner or a driver, leveraging the platform when you sign up.
Senator Ellis? Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to open this bill up for public testimony. Is there anyone here in Juneau who would like to provide testimony? You would like to?
Yes, I think I signed on the list.
Oh, okay, yes, this is your time.
So good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Members of the committee. My name is Sheldon Winters. I'm here on behalf of State Farm Insurance Companies. I'm their local retained counsel. State Farm, as many of you know, is the largest insurer of personal autos in the country and in Alaska. So we have no objection to TNCs. We have no really current position on whether TNC should be exempt from workers' compensation. We do have a deep concern about the narrow definition in this bill, and even though it's a workers' compensation bill, how that definition may have dire consequences for insurance coverage, liability issues that this committee may not have envisioned or intended, or the legislature may not intend if it goes forward as it is currently drafted. Now, Mr. Hester testified from the Division of Insurance, and maybe the best way to bring this to a head very quickly to you is to just reference the Division of Insurance's consumer warning that's posted on their website, and I won't read it in detail. I'll just read just a couple real quick snippets. And it begins with the Alaska Division of Insurance joins 14 other states in issuing a warning about the risks of ride-sharing vehicle-sharing programs. That number is now 22. There are 22 states that have issued similar warnings. And then it talks about what a ride-sharing program is, and it explains that it's basically where drivers use their personal vehicles for prearranged taxi-like transportation services for hire. And in bold states that the division wants Alaskans to know that these programs may result in a denial of insurance for participating vehicle owners, drivers, and passengers. And here's the key, and I think you heard some references to this earlier. This is from the Division of Insurance again. Personal auto insurance is not intended to cover individuals who use their vehicles for commercial purposes, period. Most personal auto policies will not cover an accident that occurs when someone uses their personal vehicles for commercial purpose. There's no exclusion, there's no difference. If it's used for a commercial purpose, your personal policy is not going to cover you. Commercial activities by a TNC driver that are not covered by his personal policy don't just begin and end with picking up a passenger and dropping them off. And they don't necessarily are limited to sitting in your home in your couch. Commercial activities include the moment the TNC driver turns on the application and then is open for business and maybe sitting on the side of the road, in a parking lot, or driving around, running for customers. Very similar to the taxi cab who turns on his for-hire light. That's a commercial activity. That is not covered by your personal insurance. So going back to this bill, our concern is the definition of TNC services are defined too narrowly so as to not include all the commercial activities. And you heard Mr. Monzel talk about that narrow definition as well, including the app on and the roaming periods that I just talked about. So there's a couple instances in the bill, but I'll just be brief and go to the most obvious one, which is on page 3, line 6. And that word would define transportation network company services means transportation of a passenger between points chosen by the passenger. So a transportation network company would not include anything beyond that. So we have seen accidents in other states that have happened when the app was on, but before the passenger was picked up. Some tragic ones, unfortunately. Fortunately, we haven't seen those in Alaska yet. Rest assured, we will. It's just a matter of time, unfortunately. What we saw in other states is that the TNC took the position that, using a position similar to the definition in this bill, was that a TNC only begins when the passenger is picked up. Therefore, that wasn't a TNC services. We're not responsible for that accident. And that's our concern. Of course, the personal policy is not responsible as well. You have this insurance gap, and that's what's alluded to in the Division of Insurance's warning. So again, I'll try to wrap up here. While this language arguably applies only to workers' compensation, if it's passed, right now it will be the only definition in Alaska about what a TNC involves. There was some testimony earlier about insurance requirements, but those aren't in law. One company may have certain insurance companies. There are some gaps that were talked about, but there is no definition of TNC or insurance on the books, and this would be the first one. Our concern is it would be used to preclude the injured party's recovery, like in the example I gave, from where the recovery should be, and that's from the TNC and the TNC commercial insurance. We propose some language that expands this. It's been adopted in a couple other states. We've given it to the sponsor of this bill and a companion bill, and we're working with them, and we're encouraged that we can get some language that we worked out. I guess I'd like to close and just say TNCs are going to be here. They're evolving. You've heard testimony how this is, you're going to see further regulation and further issues come up that are going to take some time to work through. The one thing we can't evolve, the one thing we got to get right now from the outset is the insurance coverage piece. We can't deal with this 2 or 3 years later down the line and have this gap where there is no coverage for the injured party. And so we're concerned that this language be broadened to cover all aspects of the TNC. I would like your consideration on that. So thank you for your time. There's going to be another gentleman from a trade association testifying online. He's much more of an expert than I am on this. He can tell you some of the situations down in other states, much better than I'm here to answer questions if you have any, but I think you'll get better answers from him.
Thank you, Sheldon. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I assume that commercial insurance is more expensive than my private insurance on my car. First, and you might address that. I may say that assumption. I'm not sure it's true, but could you talk a little bit about insurance coverage that's required of taxi cabs today? But I assume that's also 24 hours a day. Answer that if you would.
Well, Senator Stevens, through the chair, I can tell you what little I know, but I think I can point you in the right direction. So generally speaking, your commercial policy would be more expensive than your personal policy. I mean, it would depend on, you know, your driving history and that sort of thing, but typically it's all risk-based, and there's underwriting involved in this. The taxi cab requirements are for insurance are set through the municipal codes, and that would be the ones I'm familiar with are Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau. And I'm most familiar with Anchorage. I can't give you the details, but they do have requirements that basically require, I think it's $1 million or so. And those are more expensive, obviously, than your personal insurance. So. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
You did, I think. But just to follow up, a taxi cab company does not have the option of going back and forth between personal and commercial. They have commercial 24 hours a day. Is that true?
Senator Stevens, that would be true. I'm not familiar with their policy. State Farm will not insure a taxi cab company. So, You know, they offer personal lines of policies. They have a business policy that would cover, for example, if you're running around doing certain errands, but they're not mm-hmm. going to cover taxi cabs. I'm sure they are. They have insurance policies out there. So I'll just add that, Senator, there should be no confusion that it's even in the TNC situation and with a State Farm policy, for example, it really is not an option for the consumer to say, okay, I'm going to flip-flop back and forth between my personal policy and what Uber may or a TNC may or may not provide. The policy is the policy, and the insurance policy excludes any commercial activity. And that's part of the history that I'm aware of, is that's one of the warnings that are entailed by all the regulators, and that is that TNC drivers are under the impression that their personal policy is going to cover them, and it's not. And then, for example, I think this individual from PCI is going to tell you about an accident down south where that was the assumption, and unfortunately a young girl was killed, and the personal policy didn't apply, and there was all kinds of litigation about what applied. We just want to make it clear, ultimately, not in this bill, but ultimately that personal lines insurance does not cover the TNCs from app on to app off or any sort of commercial activity, and this will be a policy level requirement for the municipalities or the legislature, but what is the mandatory insurance for TNCs from that app on to app off? That's not in this bill. We're just concerned that the language in this bill may be used inappropriately in the interim. So thank you.
Thank you, Sheldon. Appreciate you coming forward. Is there anyone else online who's interested in testifying? Armand, are you available?
Yes, Madam Chair. Armand Feliciano here with the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. Thank you for the time. PCI is a National Insurance Trade Association. Our member companies write about 32.8% of personal auto insurance in Alaska. Some of our bigger writers include Geico and Progressive. I guess I'll start off with this, and I just want to, we have deep concerns with SB 58 in that it doesn't address liability insurance at all. A question was asked earlier of Senator Stoltz whether this involves insurance altogether. Altogether, it doesn't. So it does address work comp, but nothing on liability at all. I understand and appreciate Senator Stoltz's concerns about transportation, access to it, and let me be very clear, our organization supports innovation. It's good to have an alternative options, but our primary concern is the liability of insurance. What happens during an accident? And there's nothing in Alaska law right now to address that. So our concern, looking at this bill, you have two definitions of TNC services. So, and neither one of them covers the roaming period when an Uber driver is arguably distracted looking at that app, driving around looking for a fare, going to different places to try to get a passenger. Now, on a hypothetical is probably the best way to kind of explain what that what the implications of this. So let's say an Uber driver hits somebody, a pedestrian, injures that pedestrian, and under SB 58, right, if he has no passengers or hasn't accepted anybody, he was just roaming, Uber can just argue, well, look at the statute. It says he wasn't even doing TNC services. He was just kind of driving around. So that wouldn't be covered. So that's sort of, I mean, I use that as a hypothetical, and Sheldon alluded to this. A six-year-old girl died in California 2 years ago, New Year's Eve, precisely with the same fact pattern whereby a driver is roaming around New Year's Eve, hits a family, and unfortunately, I think that case is still being litigated today. So our concern really stems from the insurance liability of this. There's a lot of questions about what's happening in other states. I will submit to the committee today that 31 states right now have legislative activity in trying to fix the insurance piece of this. Uber, we worked with Uber last year in California. There's at least four states whereby the broader definition of TNC services, which includes the roaming period, has been adopted by law. And that's in California, Colorado, West Virginia, and the District of Columbia. Our point's really easy here today is that we think this bill is premature. I mean, if folks want to move this forward, we'd be happy to work with the committee and kind of figure out the insurance piece of this. Again, there's already, in Uber's home state here in California, they already agreed to language to cover roaming periods. We think that would be consistent. That same level of protection should be provided for Alaskans. I think that's the way to go. There's a couple of things I took notes, and I just want to make sure I'm responsive. We don't have a position on the workers' comp per se, but here's what I can tell you. There is a pending case in California where Uber drivers are suing Uber because they claim that they are employees, given the amount of controls that Uber has on them. The status of that case came out. There was an activity on that about a week ago or a couple of weeks ago where the district judge said, we've taken a look at this, and we're going to allow the jury to determine whether Uber drivers are employees or independent contractors. So that just want to give folks an update where that is. Madam Chair, I'll pause here, and I kind of covered a lot there, but I'm available for any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Armand. Are there any questions for from committee members? Okay. Obviously, this bill has a lot of intricacies, and we've had the leeway to go beyond what the main point of the bill is, but I appreciate the heads up on some of the issues. Is there anybody else online who's interested in testifying on this bill? Okay. Thank you very much. I will keep public testimony open, and we will be hearing this bill at a future date. I want to thank the sponsor for being here through the entire testimony, and we will give committee members a chance to talk to folks and get some more information. If you have any questions you'd like me to gather, I'd be happy to have my office do that for you. So with that, I'm going to take a brief at ease. Good afternoon. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is back to order, and under bills previously heard, we are going to be closing the public testimony for Senate Bill 71. This is the act relating to the practice of pharmacy and relating to the administration of vaccines and related emergency medications. Before I close public testimony, I want to ask if there's anybody here in Juneau or online who would like to provide comments on Senate Bill 71. Seeing none, Senator Giesel. Oh, I'm now closing public testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 71, version 29, LS0591W, from this committee to the next with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, so moved. With that, we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the closing documents. Welcome back. This is the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, and next on our agenda is Senate Bill 2, the Employment Preference for Veterans and Spouses, and we have Senator Wilikowski here to present his bill. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is a fairly simple bill. It does exactly what the title says. It allows for private companies to provide an employment preference for veterans and their spouses. Title 7 of the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits discrimination. However, many companies would like to hire veterans because of their unique skill sets. And sometimes there are concerns that they could be subject to lawsuits. There is a carve-out in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act that exempts veteran, that allows states to provide statutes that exempt veterans' preference processes. And that's exactly what this bill does. All 50 states have a preference for those veterans who are being considered for public positions. There are 13 states that currently allow for private employers to provide a veterans preference. There are 9 states that are considering it. Alaska is one of those. And this bill would simply amend our human rights statute to say to comply with Title VII of the Civil Rights Act to allow private employers to offer this preference to veterans. I should mention we're not aware of any lawsuits that have occurred over this. This is a proactive move. This is a priority of the United States Department of Defense. They're pushing this bill all across the United States. And it, as I mentioned before, it allows private employers to equitably compete for veteran talent. And it also helps our veterans population, which suffers from a higher unemployment rate than the population as a whole. I should mention that we recently, many of us participated in an event in Anchorage or in Fairbanks, where the United States Army was looking at downsizing a brigade in either J-Bear or Fort Wainwright. One of the things that they look at, and they told us very explicitly, is they look at what sort of legislation legislatures have passed over the years, whether they're active duty friendly or veteran friendly. Alaska has a long history of being extremely friendly to our active duty members and veterans, and this is another step in that direction to show that we appreciate the service of our veterans. I should mention we are suggesting several changes based on recent legal advice that we've received. I have a CS which we submitted to your office, and would be happy to explain those at your pleasure, Madam Chair. Thank you. And I have my staffer, Calissa Mele, here too. Explain any of those details.
Thank you, and appreciate you being here to share your bill with us. So can you just give us background on the number of unemployed veterans in Alaska and also just the number of veterans that we have?
I'm going to turn the specifics over to my staffer, Madam Chair.
For the record, this is Calissa Maley, staff to Senator Willikowski. I have the latest Bureau of Labor Statistics employment for the national rate for veteran unemployment. And I will say before that the rate of veterans in Alaska is approximately 1 in 10 Alaskans. So we have a significant rate where I want to say we're in the top three in terms of having Alaskan veterans. So this is, you know, this affects a huge number of people in the state. 18 to 24-year-old vets have an 18.7% unemployment rate compared to 11.6 for the non-veterans of the same age. 25 to 34-year-olds have a 7.4% unemployment rate versus 5.7. Across the whole population, it's a 5.3 for non-vets versus 5.7 for all vets of all ages. So you see across the board, in every category, veterans do have a higher unemployment rate. Okay.
Thank you. And Senator Stevens?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as a veteran, I appreciate your working on this, Senator. But looking at Bill, I don't quite understand. I mean, I do understand veterans have skills and talents, and it makes a lot of sense to me. But why have we included spouses and domestic partners? Maybe I need to understand that. I'm not taking a shot at anybody. I just don't quite understand why that's included.
Thank you. That's a fair question. And actually, in the CS, we are taking that out. And our legislative attorneys have suggested that we should take that out, actually, for legal reasons. They question whether or not that's legal to even have that in there. So we were trying to be expansive. The law came back and said you can't do that, and so we've decided to take that out if the committee would agrees with that recommendation.
And my wife will be unhappy about that. But
Thank you. Are there? I'm sure there's a lot of support for the legislation. Could you go through the letters that you've received, or any specific groups that you'd like to highlight that have indicated support?
You know, we have endorsement from the Department of Defense saying, you know, this is a priority. This is something that we provided to you. I haven't received letters of support, although, you know, informally we have spoken with folks who support this. We'd be happy to reach out more and provide those to you as they come in.
Great. Thank you. Any other committee questions? Okay. Thank you very much, and feel free to continue to sit at the table. We have next from the Department of Defense, Mark Sansucci. Mark, are you online?
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senator Costello, Vice Chair of GISO and Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide information after your support for Senator Bill 2. I don't want to be redundant. My name is Mark Sansucci. I am the Department of Defense Regional Liaison for the Northwest, including Alaska, and I apologize that I cannot be there today in person. I don't want to be redundant from what I just watched on Gavel and what I just heard. So I'll just focus on a couple of things. This effort is a voluntary veterans preference issue. So the private sector companies who want to do that are not going to be forced to do it. They're going to be doing it because they would like to, but they don't have to. And they're doing it because they know that they like to hire veterans because of their unique skill sets and their work ethic and reliability, but they're hesitant to do so out of fear of being sued under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And so this is an attempt to kind of alleviate that. And essentially, it's because we know that, or we think that private employers are best suited in determining which skill sets are needed in their businesses. Since the public sector has accepted practices for veterans' preference in hiring in all 50 states, the language of SB 2 will allow private sector veterans to have those policies, and then they can actually equitably compete for that veteran's talent. And while I told you this is a new issue for DOD, it's not a new issue for the National Conference of State Legislators, and I know many of you are involved with NCSL. They have a task force on military and veterans affairs, and Representative Sanders has been involved in this task force for years. And at this point, based on their instigation, 13 states have actually gotten on board with this. Washington State was first, and I could name the other 12, but I don't want to waste your time on that. And as Carissa mentioned, the February 2015 unemployment rate for 18 to 24-year-old veterans was an outrageous 18.7 versus 11.6 for non-veterans. And it's going to keep coming because for the foreseeable future, in Alaska, you will continue to receive many new highly trained veterans that are all looking to transition to civilian life in Alaska. Last year, according to the Defense Management Data Center, over 2,000 people separated from the active reserve and National Guard components and came back to call Alaska home. So with that continuing drawing down of the forces, that number is going to be static or even go higher. So you're going to be seeing more new veterans with unique skill sets, proven work ethic, and that reliability. So I might want to say that, that training and all that skill that we mentioned, you and I have already paid for by paying our federal taxes. So at this point, I'll cede the rest of my time. Thank with Senator Wilikowski and stand for any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Suitke? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much. Now going to open public testimony for Senate Bill 2. Is there anyone here? Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, if I may add, just for clarification, are we on version E or H? Because I think that H. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I thought you had mentioned that the newest version did not include the domestic partners.
I have a brief at ease. Committee's back to order, and thank you for that question, Senator Meyer. We will be working with a sponsor on a CS related to Senator Stevens' question. So with that, are there any members of the public who would like to testify here in Juneau? Seeing none. Anyone online who would like to testify? No one online? I think the lack of testifiers doesn't indicate support for the legislation, but so. Okay, with that, I will close public testimony. And my intent with the bill, then, is to hold it. So we'll work on a CS with the sponsor, and then we'll bring this up at a future committee meeting. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 24th at 1:30, and the agenda will be posted later this afternoon. With that, the meeting's adjourned.
Madam Chair, I just want to...
Senator Stevens?
I'm not sure if the Coast Guard is included in any of this.
Senator Wilikowski?
Yes. Senator Stevens, it's like we're reading your mind, because is that something we're addressing in a later version?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, it's something we've talked about. Because we're going to be working with the committee with a CS, that's something we would definitely consider.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Do you mind identifying yourself for the record for those listening?
Sorry about that. This is Calista Maley in Senator Wilikowski's office again.
Thank you. No further questions? Okay, so the meeting is adjourned.